Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a lot of other things tonight, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate
from
that.
From sea to shining sea throughout the
I
solar
appreciate
system
it so much that our regions. Radio software is deciding tonight to do whatever it wants to do. But anyway... I do appreciate it. I'm glad you're here. We're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Back in the year 2000, a couple of important things happened. For one thing, an international police officer serving in Kosovo decided to start broadcasting a talk show about things in the realm of the strange and unexplained. That talk show eventually became the number one UFO talk show on planet Earth, and it's still broadcasting night after night, and in fact, you're listening to it right now. Across the world from Kosovo, a former CNN science feature producer and IT expert decided to start in the publishing business. Having been impressed by major Earth changes, he began a new publishing firm called Your Own World. Your Own World continues today and has become a major source for those who seek information about possible coming cataclysms on the planet. His name? Marshall Masters, and he's my guest tonight. He'll join us in just a few minutes. Since 2000, this show has been publishing as well. We publish a free weekly newsletter called The K-Files. In 2012, we still have subscribers who subscribed to us back in 2000. So it must be pretty good, huh? It's free, too. And if you're not yet subscribed, tonight is your night to subscribe. Go to my website. Look right in the middle of your screen for where it says K-Files. Click that and subscribe. Now, there's something else very important that you need to do. This show is 100% listener-supported. You've probably noticed I don't have any advertisements, you know, from car dealers and insurance companies and politicians and stuff like that. Lord help us, you know I wouldn't have that. Well, it's listener supported, and it's not at all expensive to support the show, and you get way, way more value than it costs you. It's only $7.50 a month to join our members community. That comes out to 25 cents a day. That's less money than you paid for your school lunch in the second grade. How about that? It won't mean anything to you. You won't ever miss it. And you get a whole lot of stuff for it, and it can make the difference between whether we're able to continue broadcasting or not. We stay right on the edge all the time. If it were not for listener support, we couldn't be here. So how about you? If you're listening for free, we're glad you're listening for free, and it's always free to listen, but it's free because somebody else is paying the bill for you. How about you stepping to the plate? Join tonight, all right? All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Marshall Masters. You'll have to pardon the You'll have to pardon the smile on my face. I can see Marshall Masters, even though you can't, and during the break I can see him. And you just got to see Marshall Masters breakdancing to Stone Fox. It's fantastic. One of the things Marshall Masters is famous for is his video series about Nibiru, or let me get over this. One of the things Marshall Masters is famous for is his video series about Nibiru or Planet X. That's only part of the big picture. What he is really up to is the big picture itself. The big picture has a lot of pieces missing, folks. And his work has been an endeavor to discover missing pieces and to put them in place one by one. We're going to see if we can discover any of the missing pieces and put those into place tonight. Marshall, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be back, Kevin. And on the dancing, I'll keep my day job.
Well, you know, it's not so bad, not so bad.
All right.
You did all right. You know, before we dive into what we're going to be talking about tonight, You know that each time that you have been with me on the show, we have had significant interference. In fact, we once caught the voices of the morons that had tapped our telephone conversation. You remember that?
I remember that, and actually I keep that little chunk of audio, and I've used it quite often. I mean, you nailed them. You had your ears were working really well. You could hear those guys tapping on their computers going, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Couldn't understand what they were saying, but we could hear the voices, hear them tapping on their computer keys, and as soon as I mentioned it, I said, wait a minute. I said, Marshall, you hear that? And I started talking about it, and then I talked to them. In the audio of them, I cranked up their audio. We still couldn't tell what they were saying, but they got into an argument, and then they quit. I don't think they quit tapping the phone, but they figured out they had left their microphone open. They weren't too smart. Well, let me tell you a story about today, and folks, you need to know this. Some of you already do. This is a continuing story. This happened 2 days ago, and it happened again today. 2 days ago, I had Jordan Maxwell on as the guest, and I put it up on Facebook on my wall that Jordan Maxwell was going to be on. And I clicked post, and it posted it. And then, after about a minute, it disappeared. And so I waited for a while to see if maybe it was just some sort of weird something going on with your Facebook system. It didn't come back, so I posted it again. Same thing happened. So then I put up a notice talking about and talking to censors working at Facebook, and explained what had happened and told people they don't want you to hear this guy. They are obviously afraid that he's going to say something they don't want you to know. So go to my website. I didn't even use his name in that post. I said, go to my website and see who it's going to be. I posted it. And I'm not kidding. Within like 30 seconds, both of those previous posts showed up at Facebook. They came back up on the wall. So I deleted the one about the censors, and I deleted one of those announcements. Well, today, I put up on the wall that you were going to be here. The exact same thing happened. This time, I put a notice up about Facebook censors. And I said, but unlike 2 days ago, this post is going to stay up here. And it's still up there. And but as soon as I posted it, my original post about you being here showed up on the wall. So, folks, you know what? The way I look at that now, one of the people said, one of those people that posted a response said, "Well, they've been having a lot of technical issues at Facebook the past few days." Okay, maybe. However, every single time we have you here, we get tapped. I don't think they'll do it tonight. There's a reason why. I don't think they will. And I know that this Facebook thing happened 2 days ago with Jordan Maxwell. And then when I posted yesterday, and it didn't have any of those controversial guests like you are, it was just me talking about these weird sounds that people are hearing. That posted no problem. Mm-hmm. You see? And so, no, I it could be some technical issues at Facebook. No, I don't think so. No, it's highly selective.
All of this stuff is coinkydink.
Yeah,
they always like to make it look like a coinkydink, but if it was coincidental, it would be happening coincidental elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is that certain people are targeted. I'll give you a couple of quick examples. Like if you went on to Amazon to look at my books, Planet X Forecast, Crossing the Cusp, you're going to find that they're going to say 2 to 3 weeks for delivery.
Mm-hmm.
My books are always in stock. I've been. I mean, I've been on Amazon for years. It was always next day. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
First thing they did was, this was after we took on the Comet Elenin story, and we were trying to just control the panic and give people a soft landing, because I had seen what had happened back in 2003 with Mark Hazelwood. Didn't want to have folks going through that. I just wanted to give them a realistic assessment, and we had some good calls. All right. You know, but all of the, you know, the theories that they were throwing at it, the Elenin was a alien ship, it was a dark star, it was a black hole. I mean, you name it, they pulled everything off the shelf to create as much confusion as they want. But even on my videos on YouTube, I see where they'll play with the voting. For example, you know, you have thumbs up, thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat there and watched where my thumbs up will all of a sudden go down 2 or 3 points, and at the same instant, flip, the negatives go up 2 or 3 points. And so they're constantly tweaking that, or they're holding back stat reports, or they're doing whatever they can to make people think that the material's either not good or it's not popular, and they move on. It's what they're doing. I saw them with Skywatcher. The guy even put a video up overnight. All of a sudden, boom, he loses 250 subscribers off of his YouTube channel. Boom, gone. Now, they could say coinkydink or something like, you can't stop people from unsubscribing. 250 in one night? I've never seen anything like that. So, you know, Kevin, it's going on. I was watching your archive on the show that you did last night about this topic we're going into.
Mm-hmm.
I can see your frustration. You know, we've experienced it together. I deal with it all the time. To be honest, I just don't let it get to me anymore, because they don't see me as a human being. I don't see them as human beings. It's just business. This mm-hmm. is the life I chose. All right. I am trying. My thing is survival. It's the big picture. It's trying to give people any kind of edge, any kind of advantage to see trouble coming long before it gets there so that they can be elsewhere.
Well,
that's my thing.
It seems to me someone did not want people to know that you were going to be on the air here tonight. You know, I surmise from that you must have these guys scared out of their minds. And that's a good place for them to be. And, you know. So.
Actually, there was one fellow, is ex-military, special forces. And, you know, he actually checked in with his sources in Washington, and they basically just call me a pain in the ass. So there's nothing.
I just can't imagine.
But, you
that.
Know, I think that's probably softer than what I think of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah. All of this stuff, all of the obfuscation that's going on, and I mean, I was watching your frustration last night, and you're just, you know, you want to shake people and wake them up. You know, wake the hell up. Wakey, wakey. And what are they doing? You know, la, 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 you know.
Mm-hmm. Brain dead. Just
okay, brain dead.
Yeah. Okay, look, you had a chance to, you mentioned it, you had a chance to view the show from last night, in which I detailed why I think a perception manipulation operation is in the works on the subject of these strange sounds people have been hearing all over the world. I'd like to begin there, and then we can branch out as we need to or as we see fit. What do you make of these sounds that people are hearing all over the world? What's your take on it?
Based on what you have documented with the media manipulation, which I saw the media manipulation too. I didn't know it was that extensive and the number of uploads. You know, you were saying they could upload 20 videos an hour or something. I've seen them upload 200 videos within a one-hour time span.
Yeah, they can. They can.
What they do is YouTube will put it. I mean, YouTube is it's a mixed bag for them. They know that these guys are coming in, hacking into their system. They can't stop them from doing it. So what people have to understand is that every data center in the world. Now, I'm talking from professional experience here. Before I did my publishing business, I worked in Silicon Valley as a senior technical writer analyst. I was what was called a firefighter. They would bring me in when projects were floundering, and I would get it all cleaned up and get the documentation out so they could get a product to market. And that used to give me a tremendous amount of access and a lot of freedom to do things other folks couldn't do. And I worked with Oracle, Sun Microsystems, AT&T, Lockheed Martin, list goes on, all right? And my specialties were database and internet, particularly internet technologies in the data centers. And folks don't understand that, you know, you think the government's not going to see it because you've got some security package for your program or you've got... Forget that, okay? In every data center is a sniffer box. It sits right on the main trunk line. Now, you have to understand there's a firewall. Everyone's familiar with firewalls. You got a firewall in your computer, mm-hmm. All right? Once you get inside the firewall, it's one big happy family. It's what we call a trusted network. The government, in order to conduct its surveillance, and this is going back to the 90s, okay? But the first of these sniffer boxes... was called Carnivore. It was manufactured by Microsoft. And the Carnivore boxes just sit on the trunk lines of the data transmissions that are coming in and out. And as sniffers, they're going into each communication packet, and they're looking for specific things. They're looking for patterns of things. And consequently, there's nothing they can't hear, can't see, can't have access to. And in terms of beating encryption, they can beat any of the encryption out there. They want to give you the impression they can't. If they couldn't beat it, it would not be on the market, period.
Well, that's true. You know, there was a free encryption software called PGP.
Excellent stuff in its time. Yeah, I've used PGP, but it's
well,
PGP
what happened was
slowing down.
Yeah, what happened was the government told them, if you don't give us the back door to that, mm-hmm. You're out of business. Mm-hmm. And they had to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they do that all the time. They'll go, if they want to get profiles, like they did it recently to Amazon. I got through my channels where they went mm-hmm. in and they said where they're looking for people who are reading certain kinds, particularly books on anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And they told Amazon, you're going to give us the names and transactions, all the full information on everybody who bought these books. And Amazon said no. And then they said, well, you can discuss it from a federal prison. And we can go from there. And Amazon just like rolled over, and that was that. Of course, all of this is going to be vociferously denied, but this is what's going on. So there's a lot of things in the background. People do not see it. And a big reason why people are easy to fool is that most people are what I call doctrinal thinkers. Doctrinal thinkers are people that, you know, classic. That's a good question. I'll ask my minister. That's a good question. I'll ask NASA. Mm-hmm. All right. They're going to let someone else do their thinking for them on things that they don't feel that.
Well, see, you're nicer than me. I don't call them doctrinal thinkers. I don't think they're thinking at all. They're mushrooms. They're mushrooms. They're sitting in the dark and feasting on a steady diet of manure. But look, I want to get back to these sounds.
Them, by the way, God loves them, Kevin, because he made so many of them.
Well, that's God's job, not mine. I'm not God.
Okay.
So what about these sounds? People are hearing them all over the world. Yes, there were a bunch of hoaxed videos that got uploaded, and I think I documented that there was perception manipulation operation underway, and I think I documented that it worked pretty well. But I think also that I documented fairly well that the one person on this planet who really should know whether those are real or not said they're real. Not the hoaxed videos, but the original ones. Dr. Khalilov said it's a real phenomena, and he identified it. He said it's acoustic gravity waves. So, let me look at the clock. Okay, I don't want to get into it. I'm not going to ask the question that I was just about to ask. I'm going to hold off on that because we have a break coming up here in about 30 seconds. You know, there are still people. I got emails from people who said, well, I would like to know what, you know, some investigator on the ground had to say about it. You know, and I understand that. But that's what I gave you. I gave you Dr. Elchin Khalilov, who is Earth's top investigator of this kind of phenomena. That's what he does for a living. And he's known worldwide in the scientific circles, particularly geophysics. And he said it's real. All right, we have to step away for a break. And we'll be back. When we come back, I got a question for you about that.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
You are indeed listening to The Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, the breakdancing Marshall Masters. Marshall, I said when we went away for break that I had a question about all of this. Now, here's the question. You saw the show, you listened to the show from last night, and I made the statement that one of the possibilities seemed to me to be, now he said these are acoustic gravity waves. They are formed at the boundary between the upper atmosphere and the ionosphere, and he named certain things that can cause that in geophysics, but he said the power of these and the scope of their coverage, the area that they cover, far exceeds what any of these geophysical causes could generate. I suggested that one of the things that perhaps could cause this would be possibly a very large body in space moving ever closer to us, and the forces in front of that thing preceding it, and they do, compressing our ionosphere and atmosphere and pressing them together, causing perhaps these acoustic gravity waves that people are hearing. So I want to get your take on that. I know you're not a geophysicist, but you've done a lot of research, writing, and film production about Planet X. Some people call it Nibiru. What's your take on that? What do you think about that possibility?
Well, I'm looking at this, and it's taking me back to 2003 and the Columbia disaster. Now, we published an article in February 03 called "Could an Electrical Phenomena Have Caused the Columbia Disaster?" And we were we were wondering if there had been an electrical event. We really were not buying they had the foam hitting the wing root, but there were dots that weren't connecting for us. And what that did was it got a fellow who has a company up in the Northwest that produces seismic detectors that can actually detect an oncoming earthquake using scalar energy measurements. His name is Larry Park, and if you go to yowza.com, all you have to do is just search on Columbia Disaster or Larry Park, P-A-R-K. You can read the articles that we put up back then. Now, I see a direct connection between what we have there that explains...
Hang on just a second. Let me interrupt just a second.
Sure.
Folks, if you click on Marshall's picture on my website, it will take you to that web address he just gave you. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but not too sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, good. And you're there. You can see it. And I'm watching your report from yesterday. Now, I was observing the same things you were observing. I could see, and I'll be honest with you, when I see a flood of disinformation come in, I know it's a hot topic, and I need to be focused on it and watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I've gotten pretty astute at watching all the disinformation. So to me, it's a bellwether. For other people, it just confuses everything. It taints the whole topic. People don't have any sense of where the truth is or not. Like, for example, in crop circles, very few crop circles are hoaxed, but if you look at guys like National Geographic, who are mainstream, and they're going to do what the elites tell them to do, they're saying all the crop circles are hoaxed. And people, if you can hoax one, why can't you hoax them all? It's disconnect logic that they're using, and people don't want to look at it. All right, and they go, well, if they're thinking that, then they're smarter than I am, so they let it go at that. I, on the other hand, when I see the sheeple being manipulated, that's pure gravy for me. I'd go to it, like a chow hound, because I know if they're covering something up, if I dig deep enough, I'll find what's worth it.
Well, how does this connect up with the show?
We saw that with these sounds. We saw them coming on and pumping all this disinformation in on the topic and all these hoaxes, all right? Mm-hmm. So I immediately knew this was a legitimate thing, but the problem I had was the same thing that your expert had. What is powering the phenomena?
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's the issue. Where is it getting all of the energy to affect this? And he's right. It's up in the atmosphere, all right, below the ionosphere or at the junction.
Mm-hmm.
However, now let's take that, go back to the Columbia story, and then I'm going to explain why to you. Before I do that, let me just tell your listeners in a nutshell. What I believe we're hearing are the harbinger signs of what will be catastrophic seismic events.
Okay.
We're going to get the crud knocked out of us. It's going to hit. It could be, I would say, given the intensity of the disinformation cover-up, It tells me it's more of a short-term event, could be within before the end of the month. I'm looking at Ring of Fire activity. Our sources tell us that geologists in Tokyo University are observing the same kind of swarming patterns that preceded last year's 9.0 subsea quake with tsunami. So there's a lot of concern there at an academic level. And this is coming from someone who actually is in Japan right now. Meanwhile, on this side of the Ring of Fire, I'm watching the Cascadia subduction zone, and with a lot of concern. We're seeing 4.5, 5, 6. We're seeing quakes in this series and several of them, and all throughout the breadth, top to bottom. And Cascadia starts at Northern California and works its way up into a little bit into Canada. And if the Cascadia subduction fault pops, then there's going to send a massive tsunami that goes and does a heck of a lot of damage to the Far East Asia area, particularly Japan, in addition to being devastating for Seattle and Portland. And so we're seeing this. I mean, the thing that is the forces are building, I think that these sounds are what is powering the sounds is scalar energy. I think it's the same scalar energy that Larry Park, who's an engineer and a scientist, has a science company up in the Northwest, identified as being responsible for causing the Columbia shuttle disaster. All right?
Let me just ask a quick question.
Let me connect all the dots when you're ready.
Okay. When you say scalar energy, are you talking about a weapon, artificially created scalar energy, or are you talking about some naturally occurring scalar energy?
This is naturally occurring energy. And scalar energy is often called zero-point energy. And actually, there's a vast amount of it out there. It's, you know, you've seen oscilloscopes, right? You know, woo, like that. On TV, they like to use that a lot, especially in the old 50s and 60s movies. The oscilloscopes were great. Well, you know, you have a positive side, then it dips down, goes negative, comes back up positive, all right? And there's a line running right through the center.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets to that line, what that line really represents is a zero point, that the energy is not measurable because it's not moving at that point. So it kind of dips down, disappears, and then comes back and keeps on going again. So you're not going to get a measurement at that zero-sum line. And yet, it's a really vast, huge amount of energy. It's undirected energy. It's energy that forms in clouds. Now, this is pretty advanced stuff, and what happened was, after the shuttle went down, Larry Park happened to have been doing scalar testing in Northern California directly under the flight path of the Columbia. And what happened was there were quake swarms. And what Larry Park had found is prior to a earthquake, the earth releases this scalar energy. Now, we know that animals get a little freaky a few days before a quake event. Well, that's what they're picking up on, is the scalar energy. And that's what's giving them the discomfort, and that's why they're bolting. And you know, for example, in Yellowstone, you know, if you see the buffalo running out of the park, you might want to follow them. And just kind of a thought.
Well, you know, right now there are dolphins washing up on the northeast coast.
That's right. And so, I mean, these things are all really, really unusual. Look, there are so many unusual things that are happening now. The unusual has become the usual.
Yeah.
All right? People are going, oh, there's more 6.0 plus earthquakes than ever before. And what do they say? They say, well, there's not more earthquakes. It's just that there's more seismic you know, monitoring. We have more stations around the Earth monitoring and stuff.
No,
I got news
don't.
For you. That's hooey. Because a 6.0 anywhere on the Earth, all you need to track 6.0s is just one station. That's it. One station anywhere in the world will pick up any 6.0 anywhere else in the world. So that's just part of the disinformation lie. All the stations are giving us a lot more information about the ones, twos, threes, the small quakes that they weren't really efficient at measuring before, which is helpful information. It's swarming information. Like, for example, in the Canary Islands, huge amount of quake swarm activity. There's it's picked up in terms of the number of quakes that are happening. And now we have a subsea volcano that's popping off. And it should be concerned to all your listeners that are on the East Coast, because Canary Islands sits northwest of Africa. And we're talking about the Canary Islands. It's an archipelago. And Hero is on the south, far west side of it. And on the far west side above it, all right, is, you know, Le Cumbre de Vieja, that volcano. And if the flank goes, okay, boom, that collapses into the ocean, sends a wall of water, and that's it. We're talking about the U.S. East Coast from Maine to Florida. You're going to get hosed maybe as far as 40 miles inland. It's going to hit you as hard, probably twice as hard, as the tsunami that hit Japan last year. So we're seeing seismicity over there. That's what I'm looking at. That right now my focus is those kind of things, because those are the immediate threats, and I'm more focused on immediate threats. But this has really intrigued me with these earth trumpet sounds and listening to them. It's very, very eerie. And I know something big's coming, because in December 27th, there was a 9.5 in Siberia. Now, the first thing USGS did is lie their butts off about it. They buried it in saying it's a 6.6. They reported an aftershock instead of the initial event. You know, I went to the local reporting, Interfax and Russia and all of that. They're all reporting it as a 9.5. So you can say, well, there's been other 9.5s, which there has been one other, only one other, and that was in 1960 in Chile. However, the way that they calculated the force of a 9.5 in 1960 is different from how they calculate that force today. So if the rules that were used to calculate the Chilean quake in 1960...
Okay, I hate to do it, but we have to step away for a break, okay? And so we will do that, and then we'll return right after this, folks. Don't go away. I got to tell you, Marshall, with moves like that, you have to be at my December the 21st, 2012 party. You'd be the life of the party with moves like that.
Good. Just don't ask me to pole dance.
I won't. I promise.
Okay.
Promise won't do that. Okay, so, you know, we're talking about these acoustic gravity waves. And, you know, you have explained to us about these clouds of scalar energy that have been measured and that precede the earthquakes.
Right.
I want to throw something into the mix here that Dr. Kalilov said in his interview with GeoChange Journal. Now, I quoted from that interview last night, but only the parts that specifically pertain to what we were talking about last night. And so I want to read a little bit here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to read, but I'm going to summarize a longer part of the interview where he was talking about what these things may mean. And it seems to line up with what you've just told us. The part of the interview that I didn't bring up was where he was talking about that the only thing he knew of that would be powerful enough to possibly be the source of these acoustic gravity waves would be something happening rather dramatically in the Earth's core.
Bingo.
And with resulting in rather dramatic things with the magnetic field. And he said there are changes taking place in the Earth's core and its magnetic field that indicate to him that there will be an increase in the number of huge cataclysms and climate change that will peak somewhere in 2013, 2014. So what's your reaction to that?
I think we're in concurrence. That's what I'm seeing. I think that the sounds are... The thing here is, let me explain how the scalar energy took out the shuttle.
Okay.
Because earlier in the show, you had... you're saying, well, is this directly related to Planet X? What I would argue is it is indirectly related, that everything we really need to be concerned with regard to Planet X, the major problems right now, are going to be in terms of solar activity in response to what is happening, you know, with the approach of Planet X. And Planet X is a generic term. We use it generically, so it could be any number of things. But the sun is interacting with something. It's becoming more active. And that, in turn, is affecting us. And it's heating up the Earth's core, like you heat up a steam kettle. All right? So think about it. You put a steam kettle on, you fire it up, and what? You hear the whistle. Boom, you know it's time to pour the tea. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I think now is that these trumpet sounds are that. And I really want to thank you for the work that you have done, because you gave me, you connected the dot. I mean, I was looking at this mystery, and yeah, I saw the disinformation, but for me, it was what's energizing the event, you know, what's putting the gas in the tank, so to speak. Now, what Larry Park found was that, and he found it by accident. He was trying to resolve a problem with data systems. These huge, huge data arrays that, you know, in the service centers where they're storing God knows how much information. And drives were going bad. These big, massive, expensive drives. And they isolated it down to a specific integrated circuit chip that was very small and extremely advanced. And what he found was, you know, he's tracking that, tracked it elsewhere, found that it was the chip itself, and there was something that was causing the chip to fail. Everything was working exactly as designed. That was when he discovered the scalar energy, because he found patterns in other data centers that were geographically co-resident. And then what he found was when he started looking for anything that would explain it, he came across seismic records. He started going through the drum recordings. And sure enough, you know, when these failures were happening, they're time-stamped. And the timestamp on the failures was always consistent that these machines would start doing it the day before that event, that earthquake would happen in that area. So the scalar energy is really what's happening is as the Earth is building up the tension to an earthquake. And like, you know, think of, you know, grinding your jaw. And what it's releasing is scalar energy, which is just, it's clouds of energy. It's not directed. Now, there was this huge, huge quake swarm. These were small quakes relatively in size, but there were just a lot of them. And he actually had a lot of his seismic scalar monitoring stations out there, and he was developing it. And it was at the same day that Columbia was returning and passing overhead. And he was sitting there in his instruments, and he's measuring huge amounts of scalar energy that was coming up out of Northern California from the swarm area. And the scalar energy just goes up, 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 up. And, you know, the shuttle was pretty darn high. It was right up there near the ionosphere. And what happened was the damage to the wing root caused turbulence on the wing. The turbulence on the wing, what it did was it turned that part of the shuttle into a lightning rod of sorts. So had it not flown through that scalar cloud, probably it could have survived that catastrophe. But the problem was you had all this loose scalar energy floating around up there, no place to go. And here comes this shuttle. And the shuttle, because it's got this huge gaping hole in its wing root and all the turbulence, is turning into the mother of all lightning rods. That scalar energy went to it, boom. And that was what took out the shuttle. Now, Larry Park was working with the accident investigation team at NASA on that. And the reason why he came to me was there was a political fix at NASA. They got rid of the people that were actually trying to figure out what took the shuttle down. They put in a politically oriented panel so they could bury it and get everything back on track again because it was expensive. And they shut him out. And by coming to me, you know, being a squeaky wheel, he could get some attention. And he did get attention. And by the way, the government has bought his, it appears that they've bought it or had a strong interest in his technology, because I was inadvertently copied on an email. He was using an old address that I had provided him, and it had been in the copy list, and I picked it up, and so he was dealing with a chairman of a committee in the Senate, very high level, and they were very excited about it because they have a way now to predict within about 48 hours a major event. And it's, you know, so it's this scalar energy that's just floating up. It would have normally dissipated had the shuttle not flown into it. You know, just unfortunate for those people. It was the wrong place at the wrong time. And that was what went into it. And the force of it was so strong that what Larry Park said was that there's two kinds of lightning. There's lightning that comes down, and there's lightning that, earth lightning, goes up. Lightning that comes up from the earth is far more powerful than the lightning that comes down from the clouds. And that is the force of the lightning strike that Columbia took when it flew into this scalar cloud. And it just went boom in. It was like white hot plasma in there. And that's what took it out. And after, you know, we published some articles with him, that was when, you know, all of a sudden he gets a phone call from the government. If you just stop talking to these people, we'll start talking to you again. And the guy wants to sell his equipment. So that was the end of that. But it was very clear in my mind, just the manner of everything, the way it went on, that, yeah, the guy's right on the money. So when we're looking at the trumpets, what's energizing the trumpets? All right. It's all the scalar energy that's being released from the earth right now. That's what's energizing it, and that's what I think your experts were finding, that yes, they're seeing, you know, we're talking about the core of the earth is building up to something, but the scalar energy that is being released by this, all right, is what's causing the noise. Now that we know that,
we have to step away for a break. All right, folks, we're going to be back in just a moment, and we will continue talking with Marshall Masters, and I'm going to watch the break dance. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and a special welcome to those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. My sympathies to you for whatever it is you allowed to keep you away from the first hour. We're talking this evening with Marshall Masters, And getting his take, you know, he is kind of one of the most prominent voices out there about Planet X, and also about coming disasters, cataclysms on this Earth, and how to survive those. And so what we're doing is getting his take on what we talked about last night. And that's these acoustic gravity waves. Acoustic gravity waves that he refers to, I think, as sky trumpets. Some people are calling them earth trumpets. Just these very strange, loud, prolonged tones that people are hearing. And they've been reported from all over the earth. If you missed the show last night and you're sitting there thinking, oh, well, those have already been proven to be hoaxes. Oh, my. You're in need of IMU. We need to put you in the intensive mushroom unit. The intensive mushroom unit is there to assist you in unmushrooming. Go back and listen to last night's show. So when we went away, we're talking about the scalar waves, naturally occurring scalar waves, or scalar energy, and the effects that that had upon the shuttle, and the effects that that can have upon the rest of our environment worldwide. Marshall, as I understand it, your position is that and what you're telling us is that these precede major things like earthquakes and perhaps major volcanic eruptions too, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah. But earthquakes, they precede the earthquakes by 24 to 48 hours. We have an increasing number of earthquakes, an increasing number of strong earthquakes. That would be an increasing amount of the scalar energy being released prior to the earthquakes. So let me ask you this. What does that portend for space travel?
Well, for space travel, there's a whole different,
let me put it this way.
In other words, all right, remember back when we had two satellites that deorbited, and we had a huge solar storm.
Yeah.
The Earth took a heavy beating. Now, I think that you look at that, first off, our magnetosphere is weakened, and it's deformed, so it's not normal. Furthermore, our atmosphere has really been abused, so the Earth's natural defenses are nowhere near as strong as they were 100 years ago.
Or
even as 50 years ago.
Maybe even 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, there's a lot of deterioration. So we're more susceptible to things. It's the difference of give a 19-year-old a bad cold and give a 90-year-old a bad cold. Who's got the greater chance of developing pneumonia? And I think the Earth right now is like a 90-year-old man in terms of how it's been degraded, not only by natural activity of the sun, but by us. Now, we had two satellites that were deorbited after that solar storm. And one was the size of a bus, one was the size of a minibus. So they were both in low Earth orbit. Now, the thing about these satellites is that you could imagine them kind of just skipping in low Earth orbit. You're skipping along the top of the ionosphere. All right? So if there is something that pushes those satellites down into the upper atmosphere, so instead of skipping over it, they're plowing into it, that slows them, and then they're going to deorbit on an unplanned basis. So what we saw was space weather was what pushed these two satellites down into the upper regions of Earth's atmosphere, where they, instead of skipping over the atmosphere, slammed head into it. It slowed them down, and they deorbited on an unplanned basis. And we're sitting there. The first time it happened, they're going, oh, gee, isn't that interesting? You know, the replay of Skylab. But the second time it happened, I mean, I remember watching on CNN, they were reporting it, and she's reading the teleprompter with, oh, well, just another thing, blah, 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 blah. And you could see on her face, like, hold on a second, something's not right here. Okay. But she has to read what's on the prompter. And so we can see that these things are happening. I think in terms of what they're doing in space right now, if you check to see what's new with the International Space Station, you'll find that they're adding external sheeting and protection for any kind of impact events, particles coming their way, which would be the result of space weather. So they're bolstering the defenses of the ISS, which has been up there for some time. Now all of a sudden they're doing it. Isn't that interesting?
Well, look, here's kind of why I was asking about that. And you brought up something very, very close to what I was about to bring up.
Good.
The Russians just sent up a spacecraft that was supposed to go to Mars, and all of a sudden something fried some circuitry. So that while the spacecraft was still functional, it was not destroyed, their communication with its controls was not functional, and so they couldn't get it to fire its engines and leave orbit. Right. And what I'm wondering is, with all this increased earthquake activity, and based on what you told us prior to that, the earthquake is a release of scalar energy, and we have an increased amount of earthquake, so increased amount of scalar energy. And you said it just goes up, 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 up. Okay. Is it even possible? There are two questions here. Is it possible that the Russian spacecraft ran into the same encounter with scalar energy that those chips in the hard drives at the data centers encountered? And is that possible? Is it possible that that's what fried that circuitry? And the second part, is that also possibly a reason that NASA has postponed, they've canceled the shuttles, they've postponed any major manned space flights until after 2014?
Well, yeah, because they know for the next couple of years there's no point in putting anything up there. In terms of manned, the fact that this was an unmanned vehicle took it down. And I was actually very interested in that story because many years ago at Lockheed, I had worked on a satellite project, and it was an old KH-1 spy satellite that had been repurposed for civilian purposes. And if you remember the look down shot that they had right after 9/11 of Ground Zero, that was taken from the sat. That was the bird I worked on, and I actually worked on two sides of it, various different. But the two principal sides of that project I worked on were navigation and communications. And I can tell you that in order to take down that bird that way, all right, to fry those circuits, had to be a hell of a lot of energy out there to fry those circuits, because these things are really made hard. Now, if it's super hard, if they're in an environment where it's really particularly bad, then what they can do is shut them down to a heartbeat level. And it is for the engineers, it's a very scary process, because once they shut it down to a heartbeat level, all it's doing is it's just sending out a small little kind of like a Morse code signal that's going, I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? I'm alive. And then what you do is you send a signal to say, okay, wake up, deploy your solar collectors and, you know, back to business as usual. But the way the engineers explain it, it's like you're in a blizzard in North Dakota, and you find the only payphone for 50 miles, and you got one quarter. And by God, that quarter better work. And apparently, whatever that spacecraft hit, overwhelmed it to the point where they couldn't recover it. They couldn't even get a heartbeat to recover it. So that tells me something really dramatic is going on. I think it was, I would say as good a guess as any is space weather related, intense space weather related. But you pointed out correctly, you look at the space program, we no longer are putting up shuttles. We don't have anything planned. All of a sudden now it's partly economy, but we don't have any manned space vehicles. If we want to get someone up to the International Space Station, we got to go schlep them out of Russia. And it's like, whatever happened to our space program? Boom. And all those people laid off in Florida. Everything's been shut down. Because I don't think that with what's going to be going on, that it would be safe to operate it. You know, I think an important thing to keep in mind is remote viewers, Ed Dames particularly, has his kill shot theory. And I remember that. I saw his video back in 2004, 2005, and I've been following it. I think it's interesting. And I think what also is interesting is Ed is sticking to his guns. And he's continuing with it, and what he's seeing is really depressing him. And one of the things that's a harbinger sign of this is that a space vehicle is going to come crashing down. It's an emergency return, like a shuttle goes, something like that. They're thinking it's a shuttle. Also keep in mind, there's Hopi prophecy that says that a house in the sky is going to fall. A lot of people said that that was Skylab or Mir, right? But I don't think it's consistent with the times. And I would point more to the International Space Station. So I, for one, would not want to be up in a manned mission in space at this time.
There's no shuttle going up to rescue them. If they have to make an emergency evacuation, the question will be, can they all get off there? Now, they do have...
Yeah, they can. They can.
Can they?
They've got the ability to get everybody off in an emergency. And they've got these Soyuz escape capsules. So they can get the folks down. For me, that's number one. You know, losing that would be a horrific loss of treasure and science, but more important to me is the people. So I'm glad that they are going to have the ability to bug out if they have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But still the same, we're looking at a string of events that's really lining up. You have a large object coming into the system. The sun is interacting with it. As it comes closer, as it reaches its point of perihelion, that's where we really have to worry.
Let me ask you about that.
I document that in Crossing the Cusp.
Let me ask you a little bit about that. You and I did at least one show, maybe a couple of shows, on Comet Elenine.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that Comet Elenine has come and gone with really not much fanfare, are you still convinced that Planet X is a reality and is approaching?
Yeah. Totally.
Why?
I've never seen anything that disputes the finding. You know, today I'm sitting here and I'm going through old magazine articles. Mm-hmm. Newspaper clippings about Planet X, and it was on this one site that I and I'm sitting there, and it's like maybe 100 of these things. So the whole discussion of Planet X was huge through the 80s and the 90s. It was when Robert Harrington died mysteriously that the conversation went to hell in a handbasket. And everyone starts backpedaling. You start reading all these articles. And then and that people are thinking, engaged, having really, really pithy conversations. And then Harrington dies in this really bizarre way. Now, Harrington was the guy that he wrote a paper on Planet X. He was a chief astronomer at the U.S. Naval Observatory. And he actually had a telescope made to purpose for observing Planet X, and which was shipped down to New Zealand for an observation. And we actually did the calculations on it, and at that time that they were doing that, assuming they had the right kind of skies and the fact that that telescope was ground to purpose, they could have very well observed it. However, the observation data, though it was collected, was never reported, never published, and he died mysteriously of a sudden onset of esophageal cancer before the information could be published. And then what we saw after that was a sudden chill hit the science community. You know, the word got out. This is a third rail topic. Touch it, you die. I'm not talking figuratively here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It was a death topic. All right? So all of the things that are happening, it's all very, very consistent. We have science. We have folklore. We have historical accounts. We definitely have this object. You know, think about it. If we were just sitting in a solar system with one sun, that's all, one sun. Well, why is the Earth tilted? Why do we have the precession of the equinox? And we have to have the cosmological constant because our speed is changing. If we were in this incredibly stable single sun system, which is a rarity in the universe, if that's what you think we're in. What you look at our planet, there's a lot of inconsistencies here.
Well, and they have discovered now that Venus is slowing down rather significantly now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's coming was, for me, the watershed moment was in 2008 with the Avebury formation. And I document that in the first third of my book, Crossing the Cusp, and it is literally, I hate to say it, but it's a star map of doom. All right, it tells you, it shows you the orbital path of Planet X, when we're going to see it, where we're going to see it, and all of that. And I break that out with like 50 slides. Essentially, you know, the bottom line is what it's telling us is that in the early part of December, before December 21, 2012, before that date, about a week or two, we're going to see what will appear to be an incredibly large comet, like a second sun in the sky, and it'll be above and to the right of our sun. And we're going to see this at its point of perihelion, where it is closest to the sun. From there, it's going to then be cutting through our system, and it'll be going, it's not going to cross inside of our orbit, it's going to come over the top of the sun and go over the top of us and out beyond us. The problem is that there's a span of, from the point of perihelion, which is its closest distance to the sun, to the ecliptic, which is the plane of our solar system. Now, that's what we call the kill zone, all right? And this is where you're going to have the highest degree of interaction. And I believe in crossing the cusp, I put forth the notion that once this is coming over our heads, because we're actually flying towards it, and we're going to pass close enough to it that its gravitational forces could then cause a shift on our planet, exactly like Edgar Cayce predicted, which is why the subtitle of the book is Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift. And these are the things that I see coming. I have yet to see anything, and I will tell you, I am not looking to validate what I have written. I want to be wrong in the worst possible way. I want to know that I'm wrong in the worst possible way.
Oh, and I want you to be wrong.
I can't write anything to dispute myself.
Yeah, I want you to be wrong.
And that's unnerving.
And, you know, I'm planning a party to celebrate you being wrong.
Hey, man, I'm the first one. You know, I mean,
With those dance moves, you got to be there.
Huh?
With those dance moves I saw, you got to be there.
You bet. You know, I mean, that is, I will tell you, a secret hope of mine is to live long enough to hear the world laugh at my expense. I mean, that'll be honey in my ears. I couldn't imagine anything. anything. Just, you know, all the snide remarks and comments and you stupid idiot schlep and all that. I'm going to be drinking brandy, smoking a cigar, a Cuban, and dancing and listening to it and relishing it. You know, because it sure will beat the heck out of living with the knowledge I have now.
I have said on this show, and some people, you know, they sort of half hear and then interpret into what they want to think I said. I have not said nothing's going to happen. What I have said is I don't think it's an earth buster. We will survive.
I agree.
But it's going to be... Yeah, but, you know, I go back and listen to those shows, and you will hear me say there are going to be tremendous cataclysms, and I think they're going to increase in number and frequency. But we're going to survive this. Yes. When I say we, I mean our species is going to survive this. Particular individuals are not. There are going to be particular individuals that will be swept away by this. And when I say particular, I mean there'll be some who get swept away by this, and part of that will be because they just happen to be in a place that is no more, you know, because of an earthquake and a tsunami or something like that, and that's very unfortunate for them. But the species is going to survive. The earth is not coming to an end. And life will go on, but it's going to change, and it's already happening. It's already beginning to change. But I hope it doesn't change so much that I can't have that party.
Oh, man. I will come and dance at your party.
You'll come dance at the party?
I will come. Are you going to have tequila shooters?
If that's what it takes to get you to dance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Folks, you heard it right here on the Kevin Smith Show. We have an exclusive. Marshall Masters will come and dance at the party if I provide him with tequila shooters. How many does it take to get you to dance?
Oh, just a couple. And some more of that good music. That I love that stuff you play at the breaks. That site is amazing. I am going to go visit that place.
Oh, yeah, musicalley.com.
Yeah.
By the way, in that last break, I played Somebody's Been Lying to Me. That's one of my favorite songs. The reason I played that is I got a request from one of our members asking for me to play that during the break, so that's what played during the break. Tell you what I'm going to do, folks. Next week, I'll announce it on Monday, which day I'm going to do this. But I'll take requests from you, okay? And I can't get them all in, but everything on one show, everything we play will be based on your requests, okay? All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this.
I just listened to the Kevin Smith Show, and my IQ jumped 20 points.
You are listening to the Kevin Smith Show, improving the IQ of planet Earth nightly by presenting you with guests and information like we are doing tonight. My guest tonight is Marshall Masters, and Marshall, what I'd like to do is open the telephone line and invite the audience, if they wish to call in and ask you a question or make a comment, to do so. Folks, the way you do that is you give us a call at 623-444-5889. If you're in Canada or the USA, call us at that number, 623-444-5889. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call us. That number will work. It's okay. You can do it, but we understand international calls can be a little bit expensive. So we have an additional option for you. And that additional option is you just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see the picture about tonight's show right above that picture is a link that says flash message. So you can send me a flash message if you are not in the USA and you are not in Canada. If you're in the USA or Canada, get your fingers warmed up and enter the codes into that Stargate we call a telephone. It will transport you magically right here to the studio. The code is 623-444-5889. All right, we have a caller on hold. So, Marshall, are you ready to take a call?
You betcha.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Arkansas.
Okay, you said this is Clay in Arkansas?
Yes.
All right, Clay, what's your comment or question?
Yeah, on the 6 o'clock news the other night, they have remote control airplanes, and is this taking a freedom away from us, or is it protecting us, or the poor little criminal doesn't have no place to hide no more? So I'll take your comment offline.
Well, Clay, we would comment on that, but we're not talking about that tonight, okay? We're talking about scalar energy, and we're talking about these strange sounds that are happening all over the world. But I do appreciate the call, and next time we do open line, give us a call and we'll talk about that. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Masters.
Hi, Jerome.
I really don't understand scalar energy. And my question is, how would this affect, like you said, the Columbia spaceship? If something like that would affect that, wouldn't it affect all the other satellites and the airplanes and everything else?
Well, the area where the Columbia was struck was by this energy was above the stratosphere where the jets are flying. So, I mean, this energy is passing up beyond that. It just was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, I don't see this as being, it's a rare event. Keep in mind, Larry Park at the time was evaluating a quake swarm. All right? And quake swarms just don't happen all that intensively. This one, he just happened to be there and he caught it. So, wrong place, the wrong time. But on the other hand, you know, look what happens. Airplanes go into the Bermuda Triangle. Now, there could be a scalar energy explanation for that.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, wrong place, long time, and it's just an incident that happens by chance. But why would we not be putting anybody into space over this time horizon then when it's still sporadic?
Well, it's space weather is the big threat. Sun. I mean, just read what NASA and they're honest about it. Well, sometimes they're honest about it. But excuse me. We're in a solar cycle. Sun is very, very active right now. That's driving space weather. If you're in a Cessna, would you want to fly into the eye of a hurricane?
No, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, aren't the Chinese and the Indians and Japan still sending people up?
They're doing that, but that's their program. That's what they want to do. We're just talking about the scalar energy, that this was a unique event where there were just scores of all of these quakes swarming, and what's important is that they were all in a very dense area. So if you have a quake swarm, but these quakes, these epicenters are divided by many, many miles, tens, twenties miles more, well then, you know, you have these little puffs of scalar energy that are going to be coming up from the ground. It's the density that made that event really unique. And, you know, there was a lot to it in terms of the research. I mean, I've read his research, and again, it was just, it was a very rare thing. And but it explains why the Columbia came down. So for us, where I'm taking this, is we have this scalar energy. It's rising up. You know, it's interesting. While we're sitting here talking, I've got a conversation going on my Facebook page. All right. And one fellow, his name's Perry Way, he goes, consider also that Aurora Borealis makes noise that people hear, that this is only from ionic flow, no matter. All right. So you have one shade of something. It's differences of degree here. And I think that the Earth trumpet sounds, that's always been, to me, what is driving the process, what's creating these sounds, and most specifically, what is energizing it? All right, where's the energy coming from to create these sounds? Now, what Kevin's show was talking about is what we're hearing is the tip of the iceberg. All right, that again is consistent with Larry Park's work on scalar energy. So,
okay, but let me interject something here.
I was able to connect the dots on a story we did, 9 years ago?
All right, but let me interject something here on Jerome's behalf.
Sure.
I put forth the notion that, you know, we've got all this extra scalar energy heading up because of all these earthquakes, the increased number and intensity of earthquakes that we're having.
Right.
So we've got lots more scalar energy going up. We've got the sun doing its thing. And all of a sudden, we have NASA grounding the shuttle fleet. They don't have anything else ready to go. Now they have canceled going back to the moon. They've canceled going back to Mars with a manned mission. And they have canceled most of their planetary exploration with other unmanned spacecraft. They canceled it, folks. They're out of the space business, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, they would disagree. They would say, well, I don't know what I'm talking about, and they have other space projects going. Yeah, okay. I've talked to vacuum cleaner salesmen before. I know what I'm hearing. And so... And I'm sorry, vacuum cleaner salesman. I didn't mean to compare you with NASA. I do apologize, but
that was an insult to vacuum cleaner salesman.
Yeah, but I have a great deal of respect for the NASA that was, not for the one that is.
So do I.
All right.
Yeah.
So, but I put forth that idea that they've canceled any type of significant space flight till after this period of 2013, 2014. And that's the period that Dr. Khalilov said, that's when all these cataclysms are going to peak out. Well, it's after that that NASA has plans to return to space. So Jerome is saying, well, if that's the case, Jerome, if I get this wrong, you tell me.
Nope.
Okay, if that's the case, and NASA's made a decision based on that, and that, I'm not saying they have, that was my speculation. But if they have, then why are the Russians and the Chinese and the other people still going to be flying into space at this time? Why haven't they made that decision?
We would have to ask them. I mean, you know, when we do this, we always start with these, well, it seems logical to me, assumptions that, well, logical to one person is illogical to another. I'm not even really interested in what's happening with governments and what they're doing in space, aside from the fact that they've got a flotilla of solar observatories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started my site in 2000. Back then, the only thing that was looking at the sun was SOHO. And it remained that way until 2008, essentially, until, man, I am talking... comparable to gearing up for World War III, they put up a whole fleet of solar observatories. Not only the United States, JAXA, ESA, all right, the other space agencies around the world, they're all doing it. They're all trying to put stuff up into space. What they're doing, we don't know. But, you know, we can see from the American standpoint, the program is shut down. But again, you know, you have the coincidence factor, the coinkydink. So they're saying, fine, economically, the United States cannot afford to keep putting all this stuff up. But I would remind you that during Comet Elenin's flyby, that NASA had floated a story on the space station. They said that they might have to, in December, shut the space station down.
Yeah.
Deman it and return the crews.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their timing, all right, was consistent with Comet Elenin flyby. A comet has multiple tails. The two that we're concerned with are the gas tail and the dust tail. The gas tail is what's pretty. That's what always pointing away from the sun. It follows the solar wind. The dust tail trails behind the object in its orbit. And that's what we're worried was, what is behind it? Particularly, if the thing crushes, is it going to create a wide dispersed debris field? And I believe that was NASA's concern, that Elenin would do that. Now, there was a Torah code table written that was discovered before the Elenin story got hot. And it in there, it predicted that a CME would crush the comet. That's exactly what happened. We had said that that comet, once it reached a certain point in its orbit, there it would create a solar event. All right, it did. It was not as bad for us as it could have been, because thankfully the sun was directly between us, or the moon was directly between us and the sun. So you have these things where bodies are acting energetically. I do subscribe that we live in an electric universe. There's more to it than just simple gravity. And these bodies are having electrical interactions. So I looked at Comet Elenin. I think that was part of the reason why the disinformationalists pumped up the story so heavy, was in case something did happen. But if something didn't happen, you know, they set it up for themselves beautifully. They win either way.
If something happens, that's the way to do it.
It's already pre-diminished. If something doesn't happen, they've had a chance to kill interest in a lot of other legitimate topics.
All right, we have to take a break.
Exactly.
And when we finish with this break, we will continue. We'll be on Final Approach, but we will continue back after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. My guest this evening is Marshall Masters. And, Marshall, we have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, it's Jackie from Florida.
Hello, Jackie.
And I'd like to say hello to the guests. It's really been an interesting evening. And just very quickly, I wanted to touch on two points. One is to have the listeners know that they can always put on their desktop the USGS site and go and look at the earthquakes. In the last few days, there's been a 6, a 5.6 off of California and off of Japan, similar things like he's saying. And my second thing was, can we assume then kind of what you're saying about scalar is that the sun activity is exciting the Earth's core, which is building up the scalar energy, which is then discharged as if it were Earth-based lightning going up, and the sounds we hear are perhaps just, we could equate it with like regular thunder?
Well, I think you have a natural event that's happening that is, you know, like for example, the Aurora Borealis has a noise. And so we're seeing something like that. However, we're hearing these sounds in places where people do not normally see the Aurora Borealis. So this, to me, is something new. And that is that for me is kind of the kicker here. We're coming across a whole new, we don't know what. I mean, but think about where we're at with 6.0 quakes are becoming commonplace. I can remember when a 6.0 would happen anywhere in the world. It was a headline. Now
yeah,
it's not even honorable mention. So
you can see that there are 6.1s someplace during the week all the time.
All the time. And, you know, thank you for catching that one up in Northern California at the south end of the Cascadia zone. I mean, I'm watching that. That is a real concern to me because it's a fur ball. I mean, you're talking about destroying the Pacific Northwest for us, but at the same time, slamming the heck out of Far East Asia with a tsunami. What people don't realize, Cascadia is the single greatest tsunami threat on the face of the globe.
Well, Japan on the 14th had a 6.0 and a 5.2, all on February 14th. So happy Valentine's Day to them, huh?
Yeah.
That's just a couple of them. So
I mean, the things are building.
To me, it's really,
I'm glad to hear that you're following this. You're in tune. You're staying on top of it. And it's going to give you an edge in terms of surviving because you're going to sense things coming. You know, the people that laugh and walk off, you know, they're all in their little boxes. They're all good little doobies, consumers. And that's what we're taught to be, but, you know, these folks are not going to see it coming. Now, a good example, the movie 2012, Emmerich's 2012, it's got nothing but eye candy in it from a research standpoint. But, you know, what they're saying is that event is caused by a change in the Earth, which is responding to a change in the Sun. They don't go the next step to say that it's from Planet X. But I can tell you that a Japanese publisher, a very large publisher, when we brought out our book, the Planet X book, and they licensed for sale of the book in Japan in anticipation of Sony bringing out that film because they knew Planet X was in the original film. And 2012 was taken out of its summer slot where it would have made a huge amount of money. It was put into a November slot with the art films, which was a death zone. And if you watch that beginning of that film, you'll see in the very first few frames, you actually will see what they were trying to show with Planet X. And then after that, it starts getting a little choppy when they're doing the setup scenes.
All right,
there's a lot of manipulation going on.
We need to move along to our next call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, Marshall. I have a question for you on scalar energy.
Yeah.
There have been pictures taken of the planet Earth that look, their energy beams going out from planet. And there have recently been pictures taken of at least two, maybe three pyramids that energy is going straight out of the top of them. My question is this. Could pyramids have been built to ameliorate the effects of scalar energy so they could, whoever was around back then, could travel safely around the atmosphere?
Gosh, I wouldn't be qualified to talk to that, but I do believe, you know, when you look at the pyramids, and then you look at pyramids around the world, what impresses me is they are always mimicking the Belt of Orion. Okay, and the Belt of Orion is pointing always at something. So, I think there could very well be that, you know, I mean, there has to be some sort of energy connection. I find it interesting that, you know, they have the energy that someone is mapping this. I haven't come across that. I haven't found that yet. I've really been more focused right now on actual seismic events that are happening, the precursors, because my first concern is when I see something that's shaping up as a pattern. And I lived through that in 1989 Loma Prieta quake. I remember the pattern of quakes that happened before it hit. And you know, when I'm seeing those kinds of patterns, I want to be able to get the word out to the people on my Planet X Town Hall and to my friends elsewhere. So my focus right now is much less esoteric than it used to be over the years. I'm really just, I'm watching for the bad news.
All right, Brent, thank you for the call, and we're just about out of time here, so we're going to kind of wrap this up just a little bit. But what you want to do, folks, is you want to get over to my website, click on Marshall's picture. That's going to take you right over to his. Now, if you have a good memory, it is yowsa.com. Spell that for us, Marshall.
YOWUSA.com.
There you go.
And for those of you, by the way, I just want to add, there's an article I put up called, you know, about the meek, who the meek really are and how they inherit the earth. And apropos of your conversation of people being deluded easily, if you want to see who I have profiled as the people who are going to survive this coming period, read the article.
And it's an excellent article. I have read it, and it is an excellent article. All right. Marshall, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. And if you will, just stay online with me for a moment or two here as we bring this flight of the Starship in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, Marshall Masters. Great guest, and at least for me, great in-flight entertainment, as he was doing his break dancing during our breaks. Remember to get over to my website and click on Alternative Universe and get your tickets for that. If you don't get your tickets for that, it's going to come, it's going to go, and you're going to say, "I didn't know about that." Well, now you know. All right, so just click on it. Your ticket's $10. Come on. $10. Get you a ticket. Enjoy the conference. It's going to happen on March the 3rd. Also, let me thank everybody who called in this evening. And I tried to pull up the flash messages for some reason. You know, the flash message thing broke down. A couple of months ago, and we got it going again. I wasn't able to pull it up. And so if you sent me a flash message and I didn't read it, that's why. I wasn't ignoring you. I was trying, but all I get when I try to pull up the flash message is a blank window. It's not showing me anything. So, well, I'll work on that over the weekend, get it going. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.